a Bible or on your phone, Luke chapter 19, we'll also have it up on the screen. And we're going to read from verse 11. So we left it last week with Zacchaeus and that incident of him being found in the tree and coming down. And then we take up in verse 11. While they were listening to this, Jesus went on to tell them a parable because he was near Jerusalem and the people thought that the kingdom of God was going to appear at once. He said, a man of noble birth went to a distant country to have himself appointed king and then to return. So he called 10 of his servants and gave them 10 minas. Put this money to work, he said, until I come back. But his subjects hated him and sent a delegation after him to say, we don't want this man to be our king. He was made king, however, and returned home. Then he sent for the servants to whom he'd given the money in order to find out what they'd gained with it. The first one came and said, sir, your mina has earned 10 more. Well done, my good servant, his master replied. Because you've been trustworthy in a very small matter, take charge of 10 cities. But the second came and said, sir, your mina has earned 5 more. His master answered, you take charge of 5 cities. Then another servant came and said, sir, here is your mina. I've kept it and laid it away in a piece of cloth. I was afraid of you because you're a hard man. You take out what you do not put in and reap what you do not sow. His master replied, I will judge you by your own words, you wicked servant. You knew, did you, that I am a hard man, taking out what I do not put in and reaping what I did not sow? Why then didn't you put my money in deposits so that when I came back, I could have collected it with interest? When he said this, those standing by said, take this mina away from him and give it to the one who has 10 minas. So they replied, he already has 10. He replied, I tell you that to everyone who has, more will be given. But as for the one who has nothing, even what they have will be taken away. But these enemies of mine, who did not want me to be king over them, bring them here and kill them in front of me. Okay, well, we do pray God's going to help us with this reading this morning. Got to admit, not necessarily the easiest one to unpack. Not unless we unpack it, but it's not necessarily the most cheerful one either on a Sunday morning, is it? But makes us think. All the same. Here's something else that I'd like you to think. You know, when I ask you a thinking question, it does involve sometimes turning to the person beside you, if you're not too fair. What would you do this morning if you got nearly £80,000? You just handed it and told you do with it what you think is right. Okay, turn to the person next to you and say, what would you do with if you got nearly £80,000? Don't get too excited, it isn't in the office. Okay, anyone tell me if you suddenly got given nearly £80,000, what would you do with it? Just shout out.
Buy 40 guitars.
40 guitars. That's Michael over there, she probably gathered. Anyone else?
Go on holiday.
Go on holiday? Oh, right, okay. Spring harvest upgrade. Yeah. Anyone else? What would you do with it? Chris? Okay, well, park those thoughts just for a second. As we might recall from last week, Jesus and his disciples are traveling to Jerusalem. Now, unlike us today, no motorways, no high-speed travel, so they are walking to Jerusalem as a group. Jeremy is here this morning. I'm rather hoping that next week, Jeremy's on Creative, that he and Shirley might tell us a little bit about what it's actually like to be in Israel and to do a little bit of a journey. Though I suspect you did it in a lot of comfort, I should say. So they're on a journey to Jerusalem. We know that when they get to Jerusalem, they're going to be celebrating the Passover. And we know that this is something that if you were Jewish, you would try to get to Jerusalem, if at all possible, to be part of this festival. It was a key festival in the year. So we can think of Jerusalem as having like a pre-festival atmosphere. There's a lot of people there from different places. There's a lot of excitement. There's also a bit of tension in the air, so the authorities would have a lot more on patrol, Roman soldiers to try and keep the peace. Think of it a bit like Reading, just before Reading Festival. You're thinking, but we're good Christians. Reading just before Reading Festival, we don't go to Reading. Then we go to Bracknell when that's on. But you know what I mean. It's a busy, buzzing place, but there's also some simmering tension. Got to be a bit careful because things could get out of hand. Some people are already sparking this rumor that Jesus is more than just what you see in front of you. There are all sorts of rumors circulating in Jerusalem. Here is someone who has performed amazing miracles. Here is someone who has done amazing teaching. Here is someone who could be about to bring about the kingdom of God right here. It is an amazing time. But as they journey, Jesus has told his disciples this journey will end with him being mocked, insulted, flogged, and killed. Jesus has predicted his death and then added that on the third day he will rise again. It is there. As we read these words, it's very crystal clear to us that Jesus knows what is going to happen. There is a plan, and Jesus has this plan from God, and Jesus is now going to fulfill this plan by going to Jerusalem. And yet, his disciples don't really seem to grasp what Jesus is saying. And I don't know about you, but I find this quite encouraging. Those closest to Jesus didn't grasp the meaning of what Jesus was telling them. And if we've ever struggled a bit with the story of Easter, if we've ever struggled to kind of get our heads around what Jesus is trying to say, then at least we know we're in good company. His closest friends and followers struggled a bit with what Jesus was telling them. However, they didn't let it remain there, did they? Post-resurrection, once they really grasped what Jesus has done, oh boy, did they get it, and they really had to tell others the good news of what Jesus had done. So here we are. We're on this journey. And, you can imagine this sort of journey. You've probably been in car journeys where you've got four or five people packed in the car, sometimes more, I know, in this church, and it's a long journey, and people are getting a bit restless in the back. Or maybe you've been on a long walk with a group. And you know how it is if you go on a long walk with a group. Obviously, if you're in a car, you all have to stay together. But if you're walking as a group, well, you get people like me who are up ahead. I blame it on the dogs. The dog always wants to be first. So actually, it's just because I'm impatient, to be honest. I want to get on ahead, find out what's around the corner. So I'm ahead. And then there's those behind who are doing a nice pace, but also they're enjoying the conversation, enjoying the scenery. You ever been on these kind of walks? And then there's those behind who are just like, do we have to? I've got a stone in my, well, it's Jesus' time. I've got a stone in my sandal. Jesus, you know, we're tired. We're hot. Jesus is trying to keep 12 very different people together on this journey. Can you imagine them sort of saying, Jesus, you know, we're really, really bored. Are we there yet? And so Jesus turns to them and says, look, will you stop making all that racket? Settle down and I'll tell you a story. Have you ever done that to try and keep people in order? I'll tell you a story. No, if you're like us, you just try and ignore it until such time as it gets too much, then you shout at them. But anyway, Jesus tells them a story. Only when Jesus tells stories, he doesn't just tell stories for entertainment purpose. Though it does have entertainment value. This is a parable, an entertaining story with a deep point of teaching underneath it. So we have this story of the 10 minas. And it took me a little while to realize that minas was not a job description. They aren't digging for gold or anything like that. It's actually a commercial term for currency. Jesus tells this story. And it's a story that has purpose because Jesus is trying to warn them that some of the expectations here probably aren't in the right place. Verse 11, because Jesus was near Jerusalem and the people thought that the kingdom of God was going to appear at once. Among the crowds following Jesus, some had grasped that what Jesus was saying was more than anything they'd ever heard before. And they believed that the kingdom of God was now going to come, that Jesus was indeed the Messiah who would overthrow finally the hated Romans and restore the kingdom of Israel as well as the kingdom of God. And we know that after Jesus records this story of this currency, this investment, then actually we then get the story that we'll come to next week, Jesus' triumphal entry into Jerusalem. In other words, when Jesus tells this story, he wants to make a point. And here's how he makes his point. A man of noble birth went to a distant country to have himself appointed king and then to return. Now, to us today, I do admit it's a little bit of a confusing story. But when Jesus told this story, he instantly would have had the attention of everyone who heard it. Because what Jesus was referring to here is not a sort of once upon a time in a land far, far away. He's referring to something that people would instantly have grasped about the political situation in Israel at that time. There was a leader in Israel, Herod the Great, who had a son whose name, I'll just check, Archelaus, who went to Rome to have his father's succession plan affirmed. King Herod had only ruled in Israel by permission of the Romans. It was their way of kind of keeping order in their empire. They would sometimes let local leaders have a bit of influence, but it was all done under Roman power and authority. So people get this. They understand the political situation in their country. They have a king, but actually it's no more than a king in name. And they remember that in 4 AD, this delegation went from their country to another more powerful place. I'm sorry, I'm just realizing this could make some connections with other periods in history, couldn't it? Perhaps more contemporary periods. But anyway, we'll try not to draw those connections just now. And a delegation followed to try and persuade the Romans that actually Archelaus wasn't any good whatsoever. He wasn't really the ruler. There was another group they should be following. We do not want this man to rule over us, the historians record. And as a result, Caesar Augustus declared that actually he could rule over the people of Israel, but his power would be severely restricted. Do you see how Jesus has used a contemporary situation to really get people's attention? They knew all about us. It was the talk of the streets in Jerusalem, wasn't it? And beyond. They had a king who was really a bit powerless and so weak that the Romans had allowed this new king, but actually he was really constrained in power. Jesus tells the story like this. The man of noble birth is going, before he goes, he gives 10 of his servants 10 minas. Put this money at work, he says, until I come back. The noble then leaves his servants with an investment decision. What will they do with what they've been left? We need to check out our biblical exchange rates, don't we, a bit? So, this is what I've uncovered. One drachma was the equivalent of one day's wages, okay? 100 drachmas give you one mina. So the total amount of money that the noble has left with his three servants, or three groups of servants, I should say, is approximately 3 years' wages. So what does that mean in real money to us? Well, if we're to convert biblical money into today's money, we'd probably have to take the average annual wage in Reading. So look that up, and according to, this is where we find out now if we're average or what, but according to the internet, so it must be true, the average wage in Reading is £26,500. So if we multiply that by 3, we get £79,500. Is that right? Something like that. So nearly £80,000, I think. So what would you do with nearly £80,000? Well, if you were to get this in Reading today, we know, of course, you wouldn't get a property. Because in Reading, again, according to, actually, Zoopla, the average house costs you £421,000. Pounds and 70 pounds. I like the way they added on the 70 there, so that's going to make or break the deal. Even with prices on the slides, you're going to have to wait a long time before 80,000 pounds is going to get you more than a dog kennel. But it could get you a deposit. Okay, it could certainly get you started. What else might you invest in? So I thought, let's type into the net good investments. Now I'm getting some really bizarre emails, I can tell you. But stocks and shares, obviously. We wouldn't just put it in the bank because low interest rates. You might put it in stocks and shares. You might put it, although we're Baptists, you would not put it on a horse at the Grand National, would you? Peer-to-peer lending, that's another one that's pretty popular. Obviously, we think of programs like Dragon's Den. According to the internet, though, the best investments over the past few years have been the following. Classic cars. Perhaps we want to go into the car park later and see if our cars are old enough to be classics. Well, I'm not sure about that. Rare coins. Yes. We've got two teenagers in the house. Coins in general are quite rare. This is the one that really struck me as a bit odd. A self-storage unit. Apparently these are doing terrific business, way above anything else, because people have too much stuff in our houses because the house prices are too small. So rather than get rid of the stuff, we have to go and store it somewhere. And they're doing terrific business. And because I do have my Scottish parents here with me this morning, you'll be pleased to know that whiskey is a good investment. However, I understand there's a little caveat there that the whiskey bottle should be full and not empty to be a good investment. However, investing can be risky, as we know. There are lots of dangers out there. And I thought this little clip would give our brains a break and just remind us that the world out there can be fairly dangerous. Yeah, you can see where that's going. Okay, well, I wonder which of the investors or group of investors you identify with this morning. When the hated king returned, he wanted to check in and see how his investments had done. So we have group one. We might call them risky but rewarding. These investors have clearly taken a high-risk strategy, but also a high-return strategy. Everything has been invested in getting as big a return as possible. The possibility of rich rewards has driven them to put everything into getting those rich rewards. Any concern about failure has been put to one side in this investment strategy. The result? The investment has returned a staggering 10 times more than was paid in. Well done, the master replied. Because you've been trustworthy in a very small matter, take charge of 10 cities. I don't know where the cities comes in, but you can see here, very big rewards. Or are you in the second group of investors? We might call this the middle of the road strategy. These investors have tried to diversify. They've been risky investments that reap rewards, that's true, but there must also have been some steady but certain winners. The result, though, is an investment that's paid back a very respectable 5 times more than was paid in. Again, the master says, you take charge of 5 cities. So off they go. Each of those investment strategies, each of those groups could have lost the lot, couldn't they? But the reward was what they wanted. One went fully for it and got a huge reward. The other went less full on, but still went for it and got a decent reward. So what about our third investment team? I don't know what we'd call them, really. It's not the full-blown risky strategy. It's not the middle of the road. Maybe we call them Team Excuse, because that's what it begins to sound like, doesn't it? The servant returns the miner. Nothing has been lost here, but as we can see, nothing has been gained either. The return is a matter of excuses. I was afraid. You're a hard master. His master replied, I'll judge you by your own words. Why didn't you put my money on deposit so that when I came back, I could have had my money plus the deposit? Take his mina away from him and give to the one who has 10 minas. You know, when I read this parable, I thought, you know, this would be a good one to skip over, actually, because it sounds very harsh. What is Jesus actually saying here? Is Jesus saying that when it comes to what we've been given in life, we should be advocating a very harsh form of capitalism? Jesus is like the wolf of Wall Street. We put it all in, we try to get the biggest return, and actually how we get that return doesn't really matter. Well, this isn't, of course, a guide to investments, not financial investments anyway. In fact, I think it would make poor financial advice if Jesus was purely talking about pounds and pence or drachmas and minas. Rather, what Jesus is doing here is taking the familiar and turning it around to make a point about the kingdom of God. So the people are familiar with the idea of a noble who goes off to get power and then comes back and actually isn't really terribly powerful. They're also familiar with the idea of investing money. They can get that. They maybe don't have very much of it, but they understand what Jesus is talking about. Jesus is putting himself in the position of that ruler. Jesus is a noble ruler who is going to be unpopular. So unpopular that that prediction of him dying in Jerusalem will come true. He will be insulted, mocked, flogged, and executed. However, although he's going to be unpopular, he has left an investment with his servants. Today we live in a culture where following Jesus isn't always going to make us popular. So there is a question to us. First of all, do we accept Jesus as our ruler? Do we recognize the royal authority that the Jesus has been given from the King of Kings? And then secondly, if we say Jesus is our ruler, we accept his authority, what are we doing with the investment he has made with us, he has left with us? Jesus' investment strategy is clear. Jesus has trusted us with something very valuable, and Jesus expects a return on it. So this morning, have any of us got any minus in their pockets? I'm going to answer your question, no, we haven't, because that's not the currency we use around here. So we need to think, don't we, just for a minute, what kind of things has Jesus entrusted with us with? If we accept that Jesus is the royal ruler from the King of Kings, from God himself, what sort of investment has Jesus left with us? Sometimes Jesus will trust us with our finance. Now, he will leave us with finances. That's why every Sunday we collect in the offering bags, even though it probably would be a lot more effective if we just got everyone to give either online or through that way. Because it says that as part of our worship, we recognize the role that our finances play. Money is a big thing in our society. So when we deliberately put it over to God again, we're saying, actually, God is king around here, not the pounds or pence in our pockets. As a Christian, whether we think we've got a lot of money or a little money, we do have some finances. And we have to make sure they're being used for the kingdom of God. The parable we read today is not a parable about being a good steward. First of all, that happens elsewhere. And secondly, it's well blown out of proportion. All Jesus is saying in this parable is God has invested something with you. God has trusted you with something that is precious to him. Now, what sort of return are you making on it? Are you using your finances for the glory of God? Or are you building up stuff that ultimately you will not be able to take with you? You might say, well, it's not just about finance. That's what you said, Keith. You said, in fact, this isn't good financial advice that Jesus is giving here. No, it's not. Because actually it's about more than finance, isn't it? Jesus may also entrust you with particular skills or abilities. We might call them gifts that you have. Perhaps you can speak. Perhaps you can teach. Perhaps you can help with administration or with kids' work. The list is not exhaustive and certainly shouldn't be confined to stuff we do in church. Again, if God has invested something in your life, if you've got an ability, then what sort of return are you getting on it? Your abilities are not just given so you can make a house for yourself or a nice career for yourself. This is not about filling rotas. It's about getting returns on the skills and abilities God has invested into our lives. What else might God have invested? Well, if we believe that Jesus is who Jesus says he is, if we accept his lordship, that he is the ruler, then we've also got good news, that he makes our peace with God. And as we come up to Easter, as we think more and more about forgiveness, with the Forgiveness Project coming here in just over a week's time, that's a key bit of good news, isn't it? And if it's good news for us, it must be good news for other people too. Jesus has invested good news into our lives. What sort of return are we getting? Are we sharing that good news? Are we using the opportunities God gives us? So here's a few things that are worth taking away and perhaps reflecting on a bit further. What has God left us with as a church? What sort of things has God left in our church that he wants to see invested and see a return on them? What sort of things has God invested into your life? Perhaps you can go home and over lunch, you can sort of write down a little list. You know, your name at the top, and then these are the things that I've got. I've got a house. Is that being used for God's glory? Is that returning the investment, the kingdom investment? Does it do hospitality? Are there spare rooms? What sort of things do I do with the home that God's trusting me with? What about my finances? You ever do a financial review with God? The time you have, the skills you have. Have we got an investment plan or discipleship goals or whatever you want to call it in order to make the most of what God's trusted us with? You know, it isn't an easy parable, this one. It has got lots of questions, but it really challenges us, doesn't it? Do we recognize Jesus as our master? And what are we doing with what God's given us? Shall we take a moment to pray? And then Michael and the music team are going to help us just as we come towards the end of our time together this morning.